Okay, hi everybody. Welcome, welcome. Okay, we are doing the fourth mitzvah. It's so fun. I have this experience. When I read Les Miserables, it was like 1,200 pages long. Towards the end, whenever I like flipped pages, I was like, I'm so happy to finish this book. And like, I can't believe, like, what am I going to do when I finish this book? So that's what I feel like. We're like in the fourth mitzvah. It's only the fourth, but I'm like, oh my gosh, we're on four, but there's only like 118. We only have 114 left. And then we're going to have to like stop and do something else. Like, what else am I going to do when it's done? You know? So like, I'm like, oh my God, we're already at the fourth mitzvah. We're almost done with Torah. Then we're almost done with Rehersh, with Korev. And then we'll have to move on to some other piece of Rehersh. Okay. Anyway, so this mitzvah is called, oh, I should have written it. I should have written it in Chabur. I'm sorry, everybody. Hi, Carrie. Hi, Carrie Simon. Okay, so this is called The World Around. Okay, Shalo Lasur Acharei Lev V'Ayin. But he doesn't, so that's what it's called. Shalo Lasur Acharei Lev V'Ayin. It's the same pasuk, the same source pasuk that Sefer Chinuch uses and Rav Hirsch, happily. We're again in the same thing. The Sefer Chinuch calls it the same thing. Lasur, Shalo Lasur Acharei Machshebes HaLev U'Re'iyas Einayim. But Rav Hirsch titles it The World Around, which is interesting. We're going to have to go there. Okay, so here is the source sheet for today. Here we go. Okay. Shalo lasur acharei lev v'ayin, not to stray after your heart and eyes is the literal translation, but again, Rav Hirsch calls it the world around. Here we go. Okay. Here's the source pasuk that both of them use. V'haya lechem latzitzis, urisim oso, uzachartem es kol mitzvos Hashem, v'asizim osam, v'lo sasur acharei levavcham, v'acharei neichem, asher tem zonim achareihem. So again, it's related to the mitzvah of tzitzis, but both Sefer HaChinuch and Rav Hirsch go in depth about tzitzis at a different time. And neither of them bring up tzitzis here, which is actually really interesting and kind of surprised me. I don't necessarily have an explanation for it. This translation actually said, I changed it. It said, and do not follow your heart and eyes and your lustful urge. Okay. So it actually said, so that you do not follow your heart and eyes. Like, have tzitzis so that. But in that case, I don't think it would be a separate mitzvah. I think it would be the same, right? If this was a justification only for tzitzis, it would not warrant being its own mitzvah. So both Rav Hirsch and Sefer HaChinuch have tzitzis being its own mitzvah, and this, Shalo Lasur Acharei Levavcham V'Acharei Neichem, being its own conceptual mitzvah of what we're asked to actually do. Okay? So let's go into the Sefer HaChinuch. He's going to be a little bit different than last time, and it's actually like, I don't know why I'm saying actually. It's super interesting to see what he does. Okay? So here we go. Inyan Lav Zeh, okay? Shalo Lasur Acharei Machshebes HaLev U'Re'iyas Einayim. Okay, disclaimer for a second. Both Rav Hirsch and Sefer HaChinuch do something that's surprising when I saw them do it, and that neither of them explain, which is that when we see the word leave, we like naturally affiliate it with like emotions, right? This is how we feel. So Shalo Lasur Acharei Levavcham V'Acharei Neichem, we think it means like not to sway after like the things that we feel and the things that we see. Okay, neither of them go that way. Both of them translate basically leave as this like rational part of ourselves. So leave, when we say heart, we think emotions. They say leave here is, again, Rav Hirsch like literally calls it the rational. So is it the whole mentality of man? Okay, basically like the rational understanding of man. Okay, I think there's a few reasons that they do it. I could justify it to you if anyone's like, if anyone's curious about it. I'll point out the second reason when we get to it in Rav Hirsch. Okay, but anyways, just know that that's what they're gonna do. So don't be surprised by it. The first reason is because I think that leave and ayin have to be different constructs, right? If really we say shalo lasur acharei haleiv, we mean like don't just sway after your emotions or whatever you want to do. And for ayin, we're like when you see something, don't just sway after whatever you want to do. They're not differentiated enough. Right? So I think like that's the first reason. There has to be some differentiation in the pasuk between really what we mean when we say to stray after our lev and when we say to stray after our ayin. And if they're both about taivos, then we miss that differentiation. And so therefore, one of them has to be a different construct, and they peg that on lev. I think that's the first reason. The second reason we'll get to in Rehersh. Okay, here we go. It means that shenimna einu shelo niyachin machshavoseinu lechashev b'deos sheim hefech hadeya shatorah benuya alav. Again, so lev is this like rational piece. And the first part of this, shelo lasur acharei halev, what does that mean? Not to be swayed after our rational understanding. It means don't, again, shelo niyachin machshavoseinu lechashev b'deos sheim hefech hadeya shatorah benuya alav. Don't think about stuff that's different than the basis that the Torah is built on. Meaning don't think about hashkafos or philosophies or rationality or anything that you know the Torah doesn't hold by. Lefisha Evshar Lavo Mitoch Kach Leminos, because it's very easy to be persuaded by that into apostasy, right? Into like wrong beliefs of some capacity or another. Aval imi ala alibo ruach lachshov ba'usan deos haraim yikanter machshavoso behem. But if those thoughts arise, then just like make them short, right? Like don't like just kind of dismiss them, right? Walk away, or so to speak, in your mind. V'yeshna lachshov b'darchei Torah ha'amitim v'atovim. And instead, decide in your mind and then do it to think about things that are true. Okay, so I think like a little bit this rubs us wrong, right? Because like, what are we used to? Have any of you, like, I've gotten explicit advice that is not to this, which is interesting. And like, the burden is on the person who gave you that advice to justify themselves. But I remember, I'll tell you the example. I was in seminary and I said to Rabbi Fix, I was like, you know, Christianity has always been like super compelling to me. Like, I always find it fascinating. He was like, so you should read up on it. And I was like, what? And he was like, you know, if it's this like little thing that's like always so tempting, but I'm like not allowed to think about and not allowed to study, you know, like then it becomes in a certain way like more compelling. So he was like, okay, so go look it up, go read it. Like, I'm not scared of that. You shouldn't be scared of it either. And I was like, oh, you know, so I almost feel like we don't really do this, but like we don't really follow this advice of the Sefer HaChinuch, which almost sounded to me the first time I read it like a little antiquated, right? Just like, don't think about it. If bad thoughts come up, just like, don't pay attention to them. Don't give them any justification. Like, squash them and they'll go away. And I'm like, I'm not sure that happens. Okay. But then I read back to the Sefer HaChinuch, challenged myself. And this is what I think his whole parish hinges on, is this translation, which again, I did not like this translation on Sfaria, but it says, Alav zeh, zeh shenimna einu shelo niyachid machshvoseinu. What's the translation of niyachid machshvoseinu? He doesn't say, don't think about it. And then he admits later on that oftentimes these thoughts arise and we should just yikatzer them. Okay, so I think that the niyachin machshavoseinu, what he's basically saying is like, don't ruminate on them. Don't brood about it. Okay, so it's not don't think about it. It's like, don't ruminate on it. Don't brood on it. Instead, think about it and then think about something else. Like, that's okay. Okay, and he's going to actually go a little bit more into it, which we're going to like even more in his Shor HaShem Mitzvah, which we haven't seen him do yet. And this is a great, great instance of Sefer HaChinuch doing it. Okay, here we go. And then the second one is basically more what we consider pshat. Ukumokein shelo yirdufa adam acharei mara einav. Also, don't get swayed according to what your eyes see. What does that mean? Ubichlal zeh shelo nirdufa acharei tavos ha'olam hazeh. Right? Things that seem pleasurable, things that we want, things that compel our, like, us viscerally in this kind of like sensual way in any capacity. Right? It's basically a bad idea. So don't let yourself be swayed by that. Okay, so it's both intellectual sway and it's like the physical sway. Both of those are included in this mitzvah. Here he goes. Shorash mitzvah. Okay. He has not yet given us a Shorash mitzvah, really, right? His other two Shorash mitzvah were basically, this is blatantly obvious, everybody knows this. This is the first time he's going to explain it, and I think we're going to feel like a lot better afterwards than we did before, and be able to relate to what he's saying. I certainly felt that way. Okay, so here he goes. He's going to explain why. Why do we have this mitzvah? What's the point of it, right? What is this trying to teach us? What's this trying to build within us, this mitzvah? Ki b'zeh yishmar ha'adam, again, in this assumption of staying away from, and again, he's going to go the first part first, the second part second. So he's doing the first part first, the rational, right? Don't brood on thoughts that you know the Torah wouldn't be fond of, right? Don't brood, especially on like rationality, like a process of rationality that the Torah doesn't approve on. Don't brood on that, okay? Why not? This is the way to stop yourself from sin. This is actually really important in religion. If he lived at the time of the Musar movement, he would have said, Yesod Gadol Ba'avodas Hashem. Okay, they just did it. It's fascinating. They just didn't speak like that back then. I see this all the time. This specific line, I see it all the time in Sifsei Das, Yeruchim Lubavitz, and Chachma Umas of the Artemi Kelm on Pirkei Avos. They always say this. Mitzvah Zos Be'emes Yisud Gadol Ba'avodos Hashem. So he says Be'das, which is like, again, interesting, just like different linguistically. Ki Amachshavos, why? Ki Amachshavos Haraos Avos Hatimeos. Okay? Because improper thoughts is the ancestor of improper actions, basically. And actions are their children. And if you kill the thoughts, then there will not be any children afterwards to make issues about stuff. So we find that this is actually like really important, that all good comes of this. Hi, Sema.
Oh my goodness, what time is it by you? Yeah, welcome. Hi.
I'm getting that 3 a.m. Number that you told me this morning, and I'm like, I can't believe you're still awake. Why are we talking again today? I love talking to you. Hi, Sima. Gosh, Sima's in Israel. She's like tuning in at whatever ridiculous hour it is there right now.
I actually slept until like half an hour ago, so.
We still feel bad for you, Simone. This is still very, very early. None of us are going to be awake at this hour, we hope. Okay, so this is, again, what is he talking about, right? He's talking about a certain philosophy called, like, we see this crop up in psychology all the time, right? This is, like, the basic philosophy behind CBT and other things. You have to be able to control your thoughts. If you cannot control your thoughts, you cannot control any sort of moral behavior within yourself. If every time a thought comes up, you get hijacked by it and swayed by it, right? Like, you're lost. You're, in terms of your moral capacity to have agency in your own life, you're doomed. So he's saying, like, listen, that's what this mitzvah is about. This mitzvah is training us in what we call, like, mental toughness, right? Isn't this also, like, the entire philosophy of mindfulness, that, like, a thought comes and you see it like a cloud and you let it go, right? You're not ruled by your thoughts. You rule your thoughts. That's exactly what this is. Not to be swayed after our minds and our hearts. What does it mean to be swayed after our minds? We're like, that's so politically incorrect. No, it isn't. It's the basis of all well-being. We have to make sure that we have agency over our own thoughts. That's what this mitzvah is about. Right? It's good. It's a good Shorshei mitzvah. We haven't seen one of these from him before yet. Okay? We'll get many more. Okay? And the same thing, he goes in a little bit different, but also just like relevant current psychology. You'll see. It's fascinating. Okay. Vida b'ni. Now he's going to go into the second part. Lo sasur achar lev avcham v'achar einechem. The einechem part of the following year taivos. Vida b'ni v'tihi margula b'fumich. Right? So again, he says, my child, and he's not using it euphemistically. Sefer HaChinuch. I should have done like more of a history buff here thing. Like I should have looked up way more of the history, and hopefully I will at some point. But Sefer HaChinuch was actually written by a author to his son, by a Talmud Chacham. I don't know what you want to say. We don't know. It's anonymous. He didn't sign it. We don't know who wrote it to his son. So when he's saying Bini, he's not like calling us that in like a patronizing kind of way. Like he's actually writing to his son, which is actually super awesome. Okay. Just kidding. It should be like common in your mouth. Right? If you do it once, you're going to do it again. Right? And if you manage to instill a new habit in yourself in which you don't do just whatever you want to do at any given point, it'll be easier to withhold yourself next time. So if you always are in the habit of like a certain impetuosity and you just do whatever you feel like doing all the time, it's going to be harder not to do whatever you feel like doing. And the more that you can hold back from just doing, snap, what you feel like doing, again, the more agency you have over your own reality. We call this the power of habit, right? That's what he's saying. Acharei einechem. The first part is mental toughness. The second part is power of habit. Ba-bam! We have 21st century psychology straight from like 1200s in Spain off the pages of the Sefer HaChinuch, right? It's actually like really fascinating. And he says like, that's what this mitzvah is trying to train us to do. The fascinating thing for me about this mitzvah specifically is that the only person I ever knew who specifically had an issue with this mitzvah had exactly these problems that the Sefer HaChinuch is pointing out. Which is fascinating. Like her philosophy, she was like very offended that the Torah would tell you not to stray after your heart and mind. She's like, what do you mean? I can't stray. How can I possibly stray after my heart? My heart is not something that leads me astray. My eyes are not something that leads me astray. This is like a beautiful part of myself. It's so like rude and inconsiderate that the Torah is telling me that I'm straying in this capacity. Right? But like that is exactly the problem. She met exactly what the Sefer HaChinuch told her that she would meet. She met a life where, again, if you were this ruling of your rational mind and your emotional like taiva-ness. So if you are in love with someone because you're in love with someone, then that's great. But if someone else swoops in, even if you're married or like in a relationship with someone else, and that person swoops in and you fall in love with them, there's no such thing as erring after my heart. That's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. So suddenly, again, our moral commitments to each other break down. In the same way, if you don't want to do something because it's too hard, even if that hard thing is actually really good and is like a beautiful moral thing, if it's too hard and you don't want to do it, you don't do it. So the choices start being made in like a wonky kind of way, not by this, again, self-agency of like the greatness of man, but by this like obsession of needing to be tied into the very narrow Dalet Amos of what I think is right and what I feel like doing. And then that like, it like hijacks people. It just hijacks like the best part of what could be our most moral selves. Okay, so that's Sefer HaChinuch. Rav Hirsch is going to say something similar and different. Okay, I think he would agree with what happens when we're going to see him spell it out. If you go but like let's see where he takes it. Okay, here we go. Here's Rav Hirsch. And again, the curious thing about Rav Hirsch, we have to notice right in his title, Shelo Lasur Acharei Lev Va'ayin, he calls the world around. What does that mean, the world around? So as we read Rav Hirsch, you have to keep in mind that Rav Hirsch, here we go again, right? Now Rav Hirsch's, this mitzvah to Rav Hirsch is about how we approach the world around us, how we see the world around us. And if we had to guess, based on what Rav Hirsch has told us thus far, we would guess that. What does it mean that the world around us, we have to in some way see God and see God as our God, right? That has been every single mitzvah up until now. Let's see where he goes here. Here's the second, I cut out the second reason. Sorry, I cut out paragraph 13. I started with paragraph 14. Paragraph 13 is the second reason, and is actually really important in the basis of which this whole parish is hinged. So I'm sorry that I cut it out. I'm going to try to put it back in. Let me see. Hold on a second. I'm not going to open this. It's kind of dangerous. Okay. He quotes Chazal. Okay. It's just a quote of Chazal. Here's the quote of Chazal. Look not upon the world without consulting the Torah, nor only with the eye of your rational understanding or your physical eye, lest the first lead you to wrong notions of God. So Chazal is basically answering the implicit question of why not? Why can't I lasur acharei levavchem v'acharei neichem? Why can't I? Why can't I be swayed after my heart or mind? Why can't I be swayed after my eyes? What's the big deal? What goes wrong? Okay, and Chazal answer that. They say that the first, meaning if you're swayed after your rational understanding, it will lead you to wrong notions of God, minus. And the second will lead you to bestial indulgence, nus. And both together to avodah zarah. Okay, so that's his frame that he's going to explain. Here we go. So now he's explaining how your rational understanding leads you to minus. And this is basically his premise, which is that it's unavoidable. If you look at the world, again, the world around, how to look at the world around you, and here's Rav Hirsch's thesis, is that if you look at the world around you with only your rational understanding, you cannot get anywhere but minus. You cannot get anywhere but wrong notions of God. Okay, and he's going to explain that here in this paragraph number 14. I'm going to read everything real fast. The bolded parts are the parts that are important for you to read too, or whatever, focus on. Your rational understanding, which is intended only for the comprehension of the creature world, knows only what can be seen or touched. It is all that exists for it. And when, guided by it alone, you look upon the world and the interplay of things gives you the idea that phenomena, when linked together, constitute a world, you try ceaselessly to turn the chain into a closed and self-contained circle. Right? This is exactly science. This is science 101. Right? There is nothing in the world that doesn't fit within the world. There's nothing on the outside. There's nothing that came before. There's nothing that will come after, right? It's just what you see is what you get. Everything has to make sense. It has to make sense, right? The circle has to close. But he says this, listen, even if you trash that, right? Even if you don't really believe that, even if you suspect the existence of other forces and you did not succeed in closing the circle, train of reasoning leads irrefutably to one force regarded as the first and which you posit as the original motive force of the phenomena, and you call this original force God, right? So even if you can't close the chain of science, if you say, listen, there must have been something outside the circle, there must be something beforehand, there must be something that created this whole thing, and you call that God, then you must regard this original force as being the only primary force of the leading chain, okay? But this is not the personal holy God of the Torah. He says, I don't care, you're still wrong. You look at the world around you, and even if you don't sell your soul to science, and you still believe that there's something that came before and something that controls it all, Rav Hirsch is like, it doesn't matter. You're still wrong because there is a personal holy God of the Torah that you wouldn't know without the Torah, who existed before all existing things and who above all things and yet penetrates with all with his omnipotence and universal love, the God who by his will and by his power and for the purposes set by his wisdom called all that is into being, and here he goes exactly like we know he is, the living God who dominates the whole passage of time and who is also your God, who sanctifies, guys, sorry, it copy-pastes off my Google Photos, and then sometimes some of these are wrong, so I tried to edit it, and then apparently missed a bunch of them. Okay, him you will not have, him the all-powerful, all-sustaining, all-righteous, all-loving, high above all, yet near to you. What you attain is the denial or misrepresentation of God, minus. Okay, so even if you use your mind to understand as much as you can about the world, there is no way that you can get to a proper understanding of God without the Torah. That's what the Chazal said, right? Look not upon the world without consulting the Torah. You can't. You can't look at the world without the Torah. You miss everything. That's what this mitzvah is telling us, right? This mitzvah is telling us, take what you see in the world with a grain of salt. Because even using your rational understanding as God's like foremost creature, you're not going to get it without the Torah. You can't. You're doomed. That's what you should see when they see the when you see the world around you. You should see the doomingness of your own rational understanding of it and your own visceral experience of it. That there's something beyond that that you wouldn't have known without the Torah. That is the only way we can look at the world. That's where he's going. As for your physical eye, which only sees material things and can discern only bodies, if you follow its track and its observation of the world, it never beholds a unity. Again, that was his previous mitzvah, remember that? To it, the world is only a mass of individuals, each living for self, pursuing its own enjoyment. You cannot discern the law, right? You just see a bunch of stuff. You just see a bunch of separate stuff, doing whatever it wants. Nothing's in control. There's no law that it's following. There's no, like, unifying purpose. You can read the rest of it. And if you join their company, you become plant and animal, bestia and rioting and pleasure. So basically, I have to read it. I always try to skip stuff and it never works. And if your body, which you served your eye, also has impulses and wishes to enjoy itself, why should you restrain it, right? You see a bunch of stuff acting independently, all acting in its own self-interest. Why shouldn't you also do that? And if you do, and if you join their company, you become plants and animal, bestia and rioting and pleasure. This is Znus. Both Znus and Minus lead to idolatry. Okay, so again, that's the last piece of Chazal. Riotous enjoyment leads to it directly. Denial and misrepresentation of God, usually over the bridge of pleasure. For as soon as enjoyment becomes the object of your life, right? If this is what happens, if you rationally can't get yourself anywhere but a God that created the world, and what you see when you look around you with your senses is everybody just acting in its own self-interest for itself, then you get stuck in thinking that the highest purpose that unites everything and the only purpose that unites everything is self-serving. As soon as enjoyment becomes the object of your life, you no longer regard yourself as belonging to the world, but the world as belonging to you. This is so beautiful. What we have to do when we're Lieber Hirsch is like learn the opposite out, right? A lot of times he states stuff in the negative without stating it in the positive. So like, how are we supposed to look at the world? We're supposed to look at the world as we belong to the world and not that the world belongs to us. And you know no law but your own capricious impulses. From that moment too, you will no longer understand what is meant by unselfishness. You will see in every creature around you a being which obeys only itself and works only for itself. And this part is saying basically you're going to become like them. You can also reach idolatry or like polytheism directly through the eye and the understanding of the senses. If Torah does not reveal to you the one and only God, right? If you don't look at the Torah to try to understand the world around you, you get stuck. And this next line, I don't know why, from all the stuff that I've learned in Rav Hirsch so far, I should not say stuff, all the Torah that I've learned in Rav Hirsch so far, especially the Chol Rev, this one line keeps sticking with me. For with your physical eye and understanding, you behold only particular beings and activities, but not the invisible one with his dominating law. You see only gods, not God. This is Avodah Zarah. Bruch, I'm going to call on you in a second. Right? Isn't that a beautiful line? You see only gods, not God. Like, that's what happens when you look around when you look around at the world with only your rational understanding and only your, like, physical impulses. What you see is Avodah Zarah. You see a bunch of independent beings doing whatever they want and serving only themselves, and it seems to be working, right? Without something above us that educates us from the outside in and not from the inside out, that's where he's going in the next paragraph, what you get stuck in is seeing only gods, not God. Yeah, Bracha.
So I think last week you said that what we were learning, there was something that said that, like, polytheism is even worse than anything else. And I was thinking this answer, and I, like, was driving or something, so I can unmute myself. But, like, once you go to polytheism, you're really bringing down that higher power from something that you belong to it and you can't understand it into something that, oh, it makes perfect sense to you. And there's, like, a god of this part of my being, and a god of that part of my being, and a god of this part of nature.
Yeah.
It's all stuff that, like, is within my understanding. So
yeah.
This kind of answers last week's question. I think it was last week.
Yeah, Bracha, I love that, right? Like, it is. It's this switch of, like, polytheism, it's almost like the more natural route, right? Like, before I read Rav Hirsch, I was like, polytheists are such, like, weirdos. Like, everyone's such a weirdo, right? As opposed to being like,
no, I totally get it.
Right, exactly. You're like, I totally get it. Like, it seems to be that there are all these powers. Again, and that's, like, even the sun and the moon, like, having their own powers and good and bad and the power of good and the power of bad, right? But this is even more so. And, like, honestly, like, this, I understand why this is a mitzvah. This is, like, a challenge for me. It's very hard for me in my existential general life crises that I'm always in. So, like, look around the world and to see God. I look at the world and I see gods, not God. I see everyone just doing their own thing. Everyone on the big path with me is, like, walking, everyone driving their own car. Every time I fly in and out of a city, I'm like, look how many people there are. Look how many lights there are on. Like, look how many humans there are in the world. And everyone thinks that they're super important. And every movie, you don't want the main character to die. But, like, the random guy standing next to the main character is totally fine if he gets shot by the bad guy. But I'm like, why? You could have made a main, like, a whole movie about that other guy who also just got shot. Like, why is that fair, right? So that's what you see. You see, like, all these people being the main characters of their own little lives with nothing ruling over them. And that's where you get stuck if you're only ever looking at the world from your perspective, right? This is Baruch exactly where he's going, right? You have to look at yourself and the world around you from the Torah. That's Chazal. That's what Chazal meant. It's not just, like, cute. It's, like, actual good advice, right? And it's the only way to hashkafically look at the world. Not so Israel. Only through the medium of the God and man revealing Torah must it view the world and itself. This is Rav Hirsch's basic philosophy that you're going to encounter again and again. Rav Hirsch, which is, again, I don't know if it's why, but, like, it kind of makes sense why he didn't write the Moriah. Like, this is his major philosophy, is that you have to understand Torah and Judaism from the inside out. You're not going to prove stuff based on, like, the external world. Like, he probably was, like, not super, like, a fan of going to archaeological digs. Like, Rav Hirsch seemed to, like, not really care about that. Like, what he spent a lot of time doing is saying, what does Judaism, how does it see itself from the inside? If you actually get yourself into the hashkafa of Judaism, what does it look like? It must regard both God and the Torah from which it learns the law as a matter of fact, as a heaven and earth. It must not try to understand God from the world and itself, but the world and itself from God. That's this mitzvah. Which, I've been struggling for the past, like, few days learning this, like, to really understand what he means by this. It must not try to understand God from the world in itself. That's its mitzvah. Lo sasur chilavavcham v'achareinecha means, don't try to understand God from your own rational understanding and from your visceral experience of the world. You're never going to get there. You have to start with the Torah and what God tells you about yourself and the world around you, and build your concept of yourself and the world around you, which is why this mitzvah is called the world around, and God based on that. Even after you have gained your conception of God from the Torah, beware above all of your sensory understanding, of applying to God the standards. And again, here he gives us, like, a fascinating hashkafic, like, principle, of, like, a few hashkafic principles in this last paragraph that we're going to do together. Actually, it's the last paragraph of the mitzvah, so that's why it's the last one. I'm not, like, skipping anything for you. Of applying to God the standards of the senses and thinking that for your understanding, you have answered questions about God and his providence. Are you saying you can use your physical senses and your rational mind, but you're only going to get so far? Right? You're never actually going to understand who God is. But Rav Hirsch is like, so what? Don't think that. Don't think that through your rational mind and your physical understanding, you could actually understand God. But don't either think that you're supposed to be doing. You're not. That's also what this mitzvah is about. Your rational understanding and your sensory understanding only takes you so far. And the Torah takes you the rest of the way that you're supposed to go. And any of the rest of the way that you can't go with neither Torah, nor your rational understanding, nor your sensory understanding, shkoyach, let it be. Your understanding is competent only to investigate the created world. For that purpose, it was given to you, right? You're very limited. The world is spherically, and only so far as is the spherically in your hand is your understanding adequate. But God is not creature, so beware of trying to measure the creator with the yardstick of the creature. The Torah, too, discloses to you only what the created world is to you. What you are to the created world, God is, and not for you. For activity in the performance of your masculine life, what lies beyond this is not, it does not disclose to you, the reason being that it has no application to life, to the active and creative lives of human beings. Here he did it again. He only stated in negative and not in positive, and that's a massive hashkafic statement about being the purpose of the world. Right? Torah is, God is, according to all ways of life, to the active and created lives of human beings. The Torah always speaks to that. If it ever speaks in its conception of God or the human being, it always speaks to the actual the application of life and to act live created beings. Anything you talk, it's not of it. To live for humans, and so let it. You're not going to be able to end it, basically. This is also, which is fascinating to me, twice here, in this only in this mitzvah, he like referenced Rav Lichter's shkafos on things that I never heard from anyone else. Right? Rav Lichter's whole take on tefillah is that tefillah is not about seeing Hashem from our perspective or relating our perspective to God. It's seeing ourselves from God's perspective. That's exactly what he did in the previous paragraph, right? The world around us, we're not trying to piece together God from the world around us. We're trying to understand God's perception and what God tells us about the world and then see that in the world. And he just did also something from Rav Lichter that I never saw anywhere else. Rav Lichter's like whole theory is that the Torah says, you know, that let's say this, the sun rises in the sky. So it's like the sun doesn't rise in the sky. Everyone knows that the sun doesn't rise. Like the world is like heliocentric and we go around the sun. So, and Rav Lichter's like, it doesn't matter because it's not speaking to what is, it's speaking to the human experience of what is. The Torah is always ever only educating to the human experience of the world. That's the whole point of the Torah. That's the only thing the Torah ever does. That's exactly what Rav Hirsch just said right here. right? It doesn't matter. Sure, the world is heliocentric. Rav Hirsch knew that. Everyone knew that. But he's like, it doesn't matter. The Torah doesn't have to talk like that because it's not trying to teach you science. It's trying to teach you the application to life and the active and creative lives of human beings. That's the point. Anything the Torah ever relates is in that vein. And any understanding that we have of God is in that vein. And so here's the way that you measure whether or not you should or shouldn't waste your time thinking or trying to understand something is this yardstick, right? Ask yourself whether it's within your power and whether it would be of any advantage or to good living. Does it make you live better? Good, more good. Better is the wrong word. Gooder is the right word. Does it make you live more good? If you find the answer in the negative, then the mere desire to investigate it, as the sages express, is a derogation of divine majesty, an arrogant attempt to overstep the bounds with God, with which God in his wisdom has set for you. If it's not practical and has no application to you being a better human being, then, like, you're just being arrogant. If you don't already understand it, the Torah didn't say anything about it, so you're going to, like, ruminate about it and waste your time because, like, you can't deal with the fact that you have limitations. And that this just happens to not be relevant to your life. Like, you're wasting your time. That's basically his point. You're wasting your time. Our sages therefore impress upon us to refrain from all speculation on such topics as the existence and essence of God. What God is to you, creator, lawgiver, judge, father, and so on. And what his world is to you, and what you should be to it, that is disclosed to you. That's the Moriah. His work and his word, nature, history, Torah are open before you. You have so much to think about and try to understand. And not to create that from scratch, but to go there first and then see how that translates back into our world. That's what we're trying to do. Any knowledge that does not lead to this end does not belong to the sphere of man. And he says that's what the Torah was created with, a bays and not an aleph, to warn you that, again, there's stuff that's beyond the bounds of your inquiry. Your task is to press forward in your own sphere, always diligently serving God. That's what he said again, Avodas Hashem, right? At any point, wealthy and poor, smart and not smart, strong and weak. All the same Avodas Hashem. Your task is to press forward in your own sphere, always diligently serving God. At this, your inquiry should aim. For this, your understanding suffices. Isn't that beautiful? We're going to have to figure out, like, some sort of anthology of how to, like, reverse engineer Rav Hirsch into, like, the positive of what we should be doing, because I think that's, like, super interesting. But again, that line, I don't know, for me, that especially that line of, like, what's the problem? What's the problem with L'Sor Acharei Levavchem? Is that it ends in polytheism, right? It ends in you seeing the world of gods and not God, as opposed to working backwards. You go to the Torah first. You go to what we understand first, that God has taught us. And we work to see the world from that lens and from that perspective. And anything that's not there in the Torah or history or nature, there's a lot of stuff there, out of bounds. Can't understand it, so leave it. It's not our job.